Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a response of a day for the 22nd of Kislev. Today we're going to hear Sidon Hoda Behuda theoretically talk about whether or not a woman still needs chalitza in a situation we'll get to, a complicated situation we'll get to, but there's also a strong discussion of the importance of qualifications before somebody can be a posek, before somebody can be and halachic authority. And the case goes as follows. From the 22nd of Kislev, Tuf Kuf Mem Vav of 1785. So the Nevi is already a 70-year-old man. This is from Evan Ezra Kuf Nun in Mahadura Tinyana in the second volume, basically, of Shutno de Behuda. And he's coming to answer the following question. A woman had left Judaism, and then her husband died. So she's married to, as far as we know, an observant man. He dies after she's left the religion, and then after he died, she married a non-Jew in their ways of getting married, so she's really not following Judaism. She's opting into a marriage. She's following a non-Jewish wedding ceremony. She lives with this husband 20 years. And then, so I think this is an interesting context, just because I think that if you look historically, so historians know many, many things, but if you look historically, there's sort of a feeling that the Enlightenment comes in the late 1700s, and that's when people start really opting out of the Jewish community, but there's some of it already beforehand that's happening. This is an example. Here you have a woman, the interviewer is writing this tshuva in 1885, we said, the 22nd of Kislev of 1885, of Tuf Kuf Mem Vav, of 1785, of Tuf Kuf Mem Vav. And this woman had already been out of the religion for more than 20 years, so that would have put it into 1765. So she's at least an early adopter of the right to get out of Judaism. And then she decides to return to the Jewish religion for reasons that are unclear. That's also another really interesting to think about what could happen in a woman's life, that A, or anybody's life, but in this case a woman, in her life, that A, she'll leave a marriage to a Jew, she'll abandon the religion, then she'll marry somebody, and whereas we're going to see in the responsum, it's not clear, it's fairly clear that, or Noda Behuda doesn't have any reason to think that she left for this non-Jew. She left, then she got married after her husband died, and then 20 years later, all of a sudden happens, she decides to come back to Judaism. So she moves away from where she was. She moves far away. She goes to another land. She returns to Judaism, right? She becomes a Baalat Teshuva, and as far as we know, a sincere Baalat Teshuva, a sincere returnee to the religion. She marries a Jewish man. After the marriage, she remembers that when her husband had died, now remember, she, when her husband had died, wasn't observant at all. She didn't care about observance. So she didn't pay attention to things back then. But now she remembers that there was a brother. Her husband had passed away. They hadn't had children. There was a brother. If there's a brother, it means that there should have been a yibum. It means that she was required to have either a levirate marriage to this brother, or as we almost always do today, a chalitza from that brother. So what do you do? She's married to this man, when she's a woman who really needs a yibum. So what does she need to do about that? So that gets to be a complicated halakha question as to what happens when a woman who needed a yibum gets married to somebody else. And now you'd say, let her get a chalitza from the brother. It's even worse because she can't get a chalitza from the brother. Because where she's living and where he's living, you can't travel from one place to the other. So if they can't get to each other, you can't do a chalitza. So he's got danger from coming and to get back, and therefore the question is, can she stay with her husband without a chalitza, with a new husband without a chalitza? So before the Rebbe even gets into the issues, there's a long paragraph, it's a paragraph that I excerpt, but I think that bears thinking about a lot. He says, "Ube'emet charali alav uviyoter ala sho'alim ki davar ze legdolei harabanim magilash." He says, I'm really very upset about this. This is a very upsetting situation, especially the people who are asking the question, because apparently the people who are asking the question had already suggested ideas, and maybe had already ruled on it, and they were just checking with him about their ruling. And he says, because this is the kind of a question that you needed to go to great Torah scholars, like Dolei HaRabbanim. Now, clearly, Noda Behuda includes himself in that category. That's the kind of a comment that I have many times heard people say, oh, that shows a lack of humility, right? But it's important to think about the fact that being aware of one's qualifications is not a lack of humility. It's just the truth of it. So somebody's got to handle the situation. So he didn't say, I'm better than Rambam. If the Rambam were around, I would ask, you can ask me and not the Rambam. He just says, where I am now, I'm one of the people to whom you can ask this question. Whereas this guy, whoever is writing him the letter, had already ruled on it, and he was clearly somebody who was not qualified, as we'll see in a second. So he says, people who are young, very often they're smart, they're very bright, they're very intelligent, they think they have really good insights. He says, you know what they should be doing? They should be learning the Gemara with poskim. They should be acquiring knowledge, amassing knowledge. It's an element of Torah study that I don't have at all. So therefore, it's easy for me to notice as I go further and further in life, the extent to which knowledge is so vital for the experience of and for the ability to rule meaningfully on halakha questions that arise. You need a lot of knowledge. It takes time to build up. And it's the kind of thing, there are exceptions, but that by and large, most people who are young, even if they're very bright, have not simply acquired the knowledge they need to have in order to be in that group. And this man who was writing to him apparently is one of those people. So he says, "Ki'achai machilak fodo." I'm sorry that I'm going to say something very insulting to you right now. He says, "Adayin lo pasalta lecha arba'at turim." You haven't yet completed Shulchan Aruch, really. You don't really know Shulchan Aruch well. You should review what you've learned, and you should learn what you haven't learned in the Gemara and in the Shulchan Aruch and Achronim as well. And you're not ready yet. You want to be one of those people who gets to weigh in on important issues of the day, but you're not ready yet. So that's what you should be doing in your time. You're spending time saying, "I'm not ready yet. I'll ask questions and I'll just stay to the side." And he says, "Because of that, I refrain from answering your previous letters." So you sent me a second letter and a third letter. Once I got a third letter from you on the topic, so I thought it's not right for me to be so strict about it, to be so unbending and unyielding. And he says, "I want you to know, though, I haven't looked at what you wrote me until today." In other words, Zinoviev is telling us very clearly, he got a letter from a guy. He thought, he saw that the man, he clearly had looked at it because he knew that the man had already offered a ruling on the issue. He thought that the fact the man had offered a ruling on the issue was inappropriate and unacceptable, and he therefore stopped thinking about it. So the man writes him again. He says, "I'm not thinking about it." So when he gets the third letter, he says, "Oh, all right, I can't do this more. Now it'll begin to look bad. It'll look like I'm too unforgiving, like I'm not ready to, you know, let people back in when they've done something wrong, so I'm going to look at it. But you need to know that it's only just now that I'm looking at it." And then he says, the man had written that he says he thinks, this man suggested that maybe she could stay with her husband because the Torah clearly didn't obligate her to endanger herself to fulfill a mitzvah taseh, to fulfill the mitzvah chalitza. That's probably true, right? There's no obligation to go so out of your way in order to have a chalitza that you get in danger of your life. If that's true, there's no mitzvah for her anymore of chalitza right now, and therefore she should be allowed to marry somebody else without a chalitza. Because the Torah never said, when it said that the woman, the eshet hamet, the widow, shouldn't be a chutzah, shouldn't marry somebody outside the family, it must be only, this man said, only where there's a mitzvah of yibum or chalitza. But if there's no mitzvah yibum or chalitza, and he's saying there's no such mitzvah yibum or chalitza because it's dangerous for them to do it, so where there's no mitzvah, then there's also no prohibition for marrying everybody else. That's the essence, the notabu says, of the man's claims. So he says, and when I saw such strange things, meaning this is silly, it's not the way halacha works, he completely missed the point of it, because it may be true that there's no mitzvah for her to go and do the chalitza. It doesn't mean there's no mitzvah chalitza. It means there's a mitzvah chalitza that she can't do right now. And if she can't do the mitzvah chalitza, then she also can't get married to somebody else, because that's what it is. So he says, what I saw, that not only do you not know in Shas and Poskim well, you don't know Shas and Shulchan Aruch well, I got even angrier, he says, so safti charon af yoter v'yoter. I got even angrier and angrier over what it is. And look at you, a man like you, where your immaturity, he says, hayaldut, your immaturity is overtaking you, and your desire to jump and be among the Mori Hara, be among those who rule on issues of the day. So really, I shouldn't respond to it at all. And I really should just, you know, be angry with you and be goer becha and rebuke you for this. And then he throws in and he says, but you got to understand, I'm doing this for your good, so that maybe you'll learn from me. I'm writing these harsh words to maybe bring you to the right path. But once he's been approached on this issue several times and it needs resolving, he says, so in terms of this woman, if she'd gotten married to the non-Jew when the husband was still alive, so then she would be a sota. She would be a woman who had an affair during her husband's lifetime. A woman who's had an affair, by and large, our assumption is, we'll get a little bit into the fact that there was a claim by Rabbeinu Tam that if the affair was with a non-Jew, that that might change things. We'll get back into that. But the halacha generally is, a woman who has an affair cannot return to her husband. She also is not halakhically allowed to marry the man she had an affair with, but she can't return to her husband. She can't return to her husband, and her husband passes away before she wants to return to him, then she's a sota, and then you could say there's a kula there that she can, she doesn't have to have chalitza, because since she couldn't have been married to the original husband, then she no longer needs to have a yimur chalitza, because he was going to have to divorce her, and therefore the marriage is broken up enough that there's no obligation to have a yimur chalitza. That would have been an avenue to leniency. So sometimes her misbehavior would have created an avenue for leniency, but the truth is that the marriage didn't happen, the second wedding didn't happen, the wedding to the non-Jew, until after the first husband had died. So then you might say, well, but we know she had an affair. Because after all, if she married the man, let's say right after the husband died, we had every reason to think that she also had an affair with him before the husband died. But says the Rabbi Yehuda, even though she's a mumeret, even though she's abandoned all of Torah, we don't, and there's a general principle that there is a principle that we sometimes assume that a woman who's abandoned halacha will also not be careful about her sexuality. Therefore, we have every reason to think that she'll have relations in situations where it's prohibited, such as having an affair over her husband. So you might have thought that we have the right to think so. He says that principle in halacha about a woman who's abandoned the religion only applies lechumra. If there's a situation where she wants, you know, let's say she abandons the religion and then wants to come back to her husband, so there you might have had to argue that you have to worry that she had an affair and she's not allowed to come back to her husband. But in order to allow her to get off from a chalitza yibum, we don't say it lekula, and therefore we can't assume that she's a sota. And even a sota herself, meaning that her husband said to her, I suspect you of having an affair with such and such man, and therefore I want you not to ever be in a yichud situation with such and such man. And then later on, she did. She was in a yichud situation with him. I mean, she went alone with him in a room. That's the classic sota case that ordinarily, in the time of the Beit HaMikdash, in the time of the temple, led to her having to drink the water and get tested in all those ways. So there seems to be, that's where all the parties are Jewish, and she hasn't left the religion. Nonetheless, we don't say that she is so certainly a sota, so obviously a woman's had an affair, such that will let it lead to leniencies as well as stringencies. It's only stringencies that we get out of such a halacha. She is warned by her husband not to have yichud. She goes in, she has yichud. She goes in as alone for sufficient time that they could have consummated the relationship with a man, with another man. So that will create certain stringencies in halacha, but not leniencies. And here, it's going to lead to a leniency. The Rama also in Kuf Ayin Gimel and Evan Ezra says that a woman who has left the religion is treated like a vadai zinta, like she's definitely had affairs. She's definitely not been chaste in her time as a mumeret when she married a non-Jew. You might have thought, well, she married a non-Jew, but she didn't consummate the relationship. That's where the Rama says it. Says the Noda Behuda, but a stam mumeret, an ordinary mumeret, a woman who just left the religion, who didn't get married. So the truth is, so we do say in halacha that such a woman, you can be mezake la'get, right? This is a topic that came up in our times because there were people who tried to suggest that we today could be mezake get to people. That's in our times, it doesn't work nearly as easily. But the case where one can be mezake get is, let's say, a man's wife leaves him, sadly for him, I guess, or if she's such a terrible person, maybe not so sadly, but she leaves him and she goes off and she bends the religion and she's nowhere we can find her for him to give her a get. Halachically today, men aren't supposed to marry more than one wife because of Cherem Derbeinu Gershom, and therefore he wants to give her a get, but he can't because she's not coming to get the get because she's not attached to the religion anymore. So in that situation, we do allow being mizakela a get. She doesn't think she cares about it, but we think that the fact, since she's abandoned the religion and she's going off, and we can presume enough that she's having affairs that are therefore a violation of halacha and lead to cause punishment to her as a married woman, that halachically we are allowed to say that yes, it's good for her for the court to receive a get on her behalf. Ordinarily in halacha, I can act for you, or I can act for somebody else, if it's clear that what I'm doing is to their benefit. That's zakin ladam shelo b'fanav. If they, even if they're not around, even though I have no reason, I have no knowledge of whether they want it to happen, if it's something that's purely a benefit, we do it. Ordinarily, getting a get, receiving a get for the woman is not obviously a benefit to her, and therefore we don't allow it. But in the situation where the woman has left the religion, and we have the assumption that she's therefore not going to be careful about chastity, about not having sexual relations with men who aren't her husband and aren't Jews, we think that giving her a get in absentia, meaning giving, being mezakeh a get to her, having somebody stand in for her and receive the get, even though she hasn't appointed that person, which ordinarily does not work. In this situation, it would work, according to some poskim. But he says, that's only because we know she wants to have affairs. Meaning, in our case, it's not good enough to know she wanted to have an affair. We would have needed to know that she had an affair before the husband died. Because if she had an affair before the husband died, then she's a woman who's had an affair, who couldn't stay with her husband, and then she wouldn't need the chalitza. So it wouldn't make her a good person, but it would get her in our current situation to stay with her husband, even though she doesn't have a chalitza, from the brother who's in that faraway country. So nobody says, but you don't know that she had an affair. The halacha that we will deposit a get for her with the court and will consider it a valid get because it's to her benefit is only because we know she might have an affair and she one day will have an affair. But, and in our case, it would be like for when she also got married, although in that case, the husband died first. But that's why we do it. But it's not because we know that she did, because nobody writes, maybe nobody, she didn't find anybody to have relations with. So that's an interesting claim to make, because in our days, I think the statistics are that women who want to find somebody to have an affair with will find somebody they can have an affair with if they want to. But I think that more broadly would say, you don't know if it's worked out for her. She's open to the possibility, but that doesn't mean she's willing to do it with anybody. It means that she's open. So anyway. So therefore, we cannot assume halachically that this woman had an affair, and this would be true, not that we didn't mention, nobody even mentions it, but it would be true even if she said she had one, because we can't trust her, because she's got a stake in saying it. We also don't generally trust people when they say negative things about themselves in court situations. More than that, the Ravid says that even if she actually had the affair, the Ravid says it doesn't matter, she'll still need a chalitza, because after all, let's remember, if she had an affair, it's true that halakhically she's not allowed to go back to her husband and live with him, but it's also true that she's still married to him. Right? Let's say she had an affair and we didn't catch her. But we know that she had an affair, right? It's well established she had an affair, but not only the court would have punished her. So she can't stay with her husband. But he hasn't yet given her a get. And then he doesn't die. This is a hypothetical case I'm coming up with. And then she has another affair where witnesses say to her, you know, you're a married woman, you're not allowed to have this affair. If you have this affair, it's a capital crime. And they give her the warning, theoretically, right? They go to court. What would the court say? They would say it's true she had an affair because she's still married. So the Ravid held that she still, if the husband then dies, she still needs a chalitza because they're still married. And he's not the only one. And the Maharshal, Niyam Shlomo, and Yevamot thought the Ravid was right. He brought a lot of proofs to show, and the Rebbe Yehuda likes those proofs. The Rebbe Yehuda thinks the proofs are very convincing. And the Ramah was machmir for that opinion. The Ramah held stringently for that opinion that we need to have a chalitza. So who's going to come along and say, and that's true even if she definitely had an affair and then the husband died. This is all the more so we don't even know that she had an affair. It's just that she's a mumeri, she's left the religion. So he thinks, therefore, you need, and he says also, by the way, he says, he throws in, gam she'ini kedai, and this is something that I don't think people today would do, but the Rebbe Yehuda, living in the 1700s, says, I'm not really worthy of doing this, but I want you to know that the Ravid makes a lot of sense to me. And because in the Gemara, it's a machloket Rav and Shmuel, and Rav says that sarat sota, that a co-wife with a sota, meaning she can't have Yibum, but he didn't say that she's completely pater turah from the whole situation. It sounds like she can't have Yibum, but she needs to have a chalitza. So that would suggest, like the Ravid said, it would suggest the Ravid is right. And therefore, he thinks that the Ravid is more right. So that's just watching it. It means that in the mid-1700s, the late 1700s, the Rebbe Yehuda doesn't think of Rishonim as being so distant from him that he's not allowed to say, we've got these arguments in Rishonim, and I think this Rishon is right. Now, in this situation, it's not such a revolutionary thing to do because the Ramah had ruled that we should be stringent like that. We should follow that opinion because even though it's a stringency, we should be stringent to be careful about it. The Rebbe is coming along saying it's not just being careful. I think he's actually right. I think that's the way the halacha in the Gemara really comes out. Another possibility for a way to get around this problem is that there are poskim who held. There were those who held that, let's suppose that not that she had left the religion. Let's suppose you have an average, ordinary, regular Jewish woman, a good, fine, observant woman. Her husband is good and fine and observant, and sadly the husband passes away without children. Is she supposed to have a yibum or a chalitza? And the brother is a mumar. The brother has left the religion. So there are poskim who say she doesn't have to worry about it. She's muteret lashuk. So you might think that here too, meaning that because it's so wrong to marry the brother, however we explain it, let's say something like she never got married on the assumption that she would have to worry about a yibum or such a marriage to a brother who had left the religion. So therefore you might have said, well, just reverse it. If she's the one who's not part of the religion, maybe also yibum and chalitza don't come into play. The whole question of getting a marriage or having the spitting in the shoes ceremony isn't an issue that she has to worry about. So he says, I don't think there's any room to be mekil in that way, because first of all, the machaber, the Shulchan Aruch, does not pask in that way, does not rule that if the brother has abandoned the religion, that we don't have to worry about yibum and she's completely free of it. And the Ramah doesn't say that, it doesn't fully agree with it. The Ramah says, let's suppose she had already married somebody else, not realizing she needed a yibum or a chalitza. So she just assumed she didn't need one, and she got married to somebody else. So in that situation, if the existing brother has left the religion, we won't make her divorce her husband until she gets the chalitza. In addition, says the Notabi Huda, that whole discussion was where the brother had left the religion at the time of the original marriage. But in our case, this woman had left the religion certainly after the marriage occurred, long after the marriage occurred, and therefore it's not the same thing. So there's a side discussion here that I want to get fully into, but there is some reason to think, you might have thought, that when she leaves the religion, it's even worse, because for a yebam, for the brother to marry her would be an even worse thing than for her to marry than for a Jewish woman to marry a mumar yebam, because of the whole halacha that comes from the story of Pinchas, that we have this idea that of Zimri, really, that when a Jewish man is having relations with a non-Jewish woman, there's this halacha that kanaim pogimbo, that those who are very zealous for halacha would have the right to kill that person to make a point and to stop him from doing it. That halacha does not apply if the woman is the Jew and the non-Jew in that relationship is the man. So it seems like for a Jewish woman who's observant to have relations with a non-Jew, and then we're thinking, and maybe that would apply to a mumar as well, to a Jew who has left the religion, maybe they would count as the non-Jewish part of the relationship, that would seem to be worse. He says it's not true for all sorts of reasons. One reason is that, as I said before, the whole reason that if the brother has left the religion, that she doesn't have to do yibum chalitza, might not have to do with the fact that he's no longer considered Jewish. It might have to do with the fact that she never agreed when she got married. There's an implicit condition that she wouldn't have to have a yibum, because she would never want to be stuck having to have a yibum marriage or even having to be dependent on him for a chalitza. And it's also possible, says the Rabbi Yehuda, that when it comes to the yibum, it says, it talks about brothers, and it could be that a brother who has left the religion is no longer considered a brother, because there are other places in halacha where we say if somebody's not your achicha b'mitzvot, if he's not your brother in fidelity to the Jewish religion, he doesn't count as your brother. So all of those things only apply to the brother, not to her if she's left the religion. In addition, he says, and this gets to the question of also, that I don't want to get into at length, but the question of whether or not, let's say, people try to force a Jew to have relations with a non-Jewish woman, he might have to let himself be killed rather than do it, whereas she doesn't have that. So there's all sorts of discussions about why that would happen, but the Notabi Huda suggests an idea that he finds in a Rambam, that Rambam applied elsewhere, but he thinks would apply to our situation as well, to let us know why as well, which would tell you why a Jewish man having relations with a non-Jewish woman would be worse than a Jewish woman having relations with a Jewish man. The Rambam in Perek Yud Bet, Halacha Zayin, says, this sin of having relations with non-Jews is, don't take it lightly, even though there's no death penalty for it. That's what the Rambam was bothered by. You might think, oh, there's no death penalty, it must be not so bad. He says, it's not at all true, because in all the arayot, all the other prohibited sexual relations where there is a death penalty, even if you have them, the child that comes out of the relation, if there were to be a child, the pregnancy in a child, the child will be a mamzer. So people today think mamzer means child's just, terrible, there's nothing good about this child, but that's not really the truth of the halachic situation of a mamzer. The truth of the halachic situation of a mamzer is the he or she can't marry ordinary Jews, but in every other way is a full Jew. Right? Whereas, if a Jewish man has relations with a non-Jewish woman, intermarries, right, with a non-Jewish woman, and they have children, those children are Jewish. And halachically, it's not only they're not Jewish, halachically, they're not this man's children because they're not in the Jewish religion. And if they convert after they're born, they're now Jews, but they're not his children halachically in that way. So he says that might be the whole problem with also having relations with a non-Jewish woman, and therefore it would mean that now our situation, the Chalitza Yibum situation, would not be parallel to whether the brother is a Mumar as to whether she's a Mumar. So getting back to our conversation, he says, so none of that seems to me to be a way to help her think that maybe she doesn't need a Chalitza, in which case she's stuck. So then he thought, I might try to find another way to find help or find a chalitza. Notice that. And I think it bears notice, although I'll give away the ending right now, he's not going to end up finding her any way out. He's going to end up saying he thinks she's got to wait, she's got to separate from her current husband until such time she can get a chalitza some way or other. But notice that he's working hard to try to see if there are ways to help her out, even though this is a woman who left the religion, spent 20 years married to a non-Jewish man, and did all these terrible things. Nonetheless, it's the role of a posek to try to help Jews keep as much of the Torah as they can. If they want to keep the Torah in some way, and they're coming with a halakha question, that's their job, and that's what he's trying to do. So then he thought, maybe there's another way to leniency, that maybe if a woman who needed a chalitza or a yibum, well, we tell her not to get married, that's only if she hasn't yet gotten married. But if she's already gotten married, maybe that breaks up the zekika liyibum, the need for yibum. He's getting from a Tosfos Yibama where the re said it in the other way around. That let's say the situation there is, let's suppose a brother, there are two brothers, right? And one brother's married to a woman, and the second brother has kiddushin with the sister of this woman, right? So that's perfectly allowed. If the brother, if they both stay alive, it happens sometimes, right? You have two brothers, married two sisters. There's no problem in that in halacha. The problem is that if they've already married the two sisters, and then one of them sadly passes away, if one of them passes away, the other one can't do yibum because he's married to her sister, and you can't marry two sisters in halacha. So let's suppose he hasn't yet fully married her. He's only had kiddushin, which doesn't completely create a marriage. So that's what we say to him, listen, don't end up the marriage until you do a chalitza, because if you marry her, it'll look like you're marrying, if you complete the marriage, it'll look like you're marrying the sister of the woman you're supposed to have yibum or chalitza with, and therefore you shouldn't do it. But if you already married her, so then that gets rid of his connection to the widow, and therefore he's allowed. So you might think, he says, that if you're already married, then it's okay, and the connection between of Yibum and Chalitza disappears for them. And that's the opinion of the Rosh in terms of those sisters things. And therefore, he said, you might say the same thing here. She had Kiddushin and marriage with somebody else. And so therefore she can't, because she's a married woman, have leveret marriage, and therefore her connection to the original brother has gone away. And therefore she should be allowed to stay with her husband without a chalitza. So he says, but it's not true, he ends up saying, because it's at most a suffix. It's at most a doubtful thing, because there's a machloket in the Gemara as to whether it's effective to marry a woman who needs yibum. Let's say she doesn't know and they don't realize what's going on, and another man comes and has and gives her a ring and he says, "I am actually," she's happy to accept the kiddushin. Does that work? Are they now linked to each other? So Rav held they aren't, because her connection to the love lever, to the brother who she's supposed to have yibum chalitza with, is so strong that she can't do it. But even according to Shmuel, who disagrees, so he, the notabita says, but that's only out of a suffix. But that suffix maybe would be good enough, and we could put together a sveik, we could put together another doubt. We could say that maybe she doesn't have to say, maybe you could say, well, maybe she had an affair, and even if she didn't have an affair, we know that she's gotten married to this guy. But says the notabita, since none of these things are a beberer, so then you also have a sveik the other way around. Maybe she didn't have relations with anybody, and therefore, before her first husband passed away, and therefore she fully needs Yibum. And even if she did, maybe the halacha is like the Ravid, that having an affair doesn't get rid of the need to have Yibum or Chalitza. And therefore he ends up thinking it's all a problem. He gets the whole thing also about the fact that, you know, it might even be worse than when the brother is a Mumar, because when the brother's a Mumar, he can change his mind and return to Judaism at any time, but she can't stop being a nation. He goes through this whole thing, but fundamentally comes down that goes out on the side that there's nothing to do for her. At the very end of the tshuva, he says, and besides all of this, I want you to know a thought I just had, which I haven't really tested it out yet. I haven't really thought it through. So it's odd to me that he's writing this in a letter to this man who he's very upset with for having rushed to rule on issues that he's not ready for, but then he feels comfortable sharing an idea he just had that popped into his head. He says, we don't agree with Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam had held that if a woman has an affair with a non-Jew while she's married, she can stay married to her original husband. Because Rabbeinu Tam felt, for whatever reason, that an affair with a non-Jew doesn't count in that sense, halachically, because of a verse in Tanakh that says, Zirmatsu sim zirmatam, that it doesn't count in these issues. But Rabbeinu Tam only said it in terms of that adulterer, that particular person, as the Truman Edition proved. So that would mean, theoretically, she had an affair. But in terms of the original husband, it's not so clear that she could do that. So he suggests that maybe also that Rabbeinu Tam would have another way to apply for various reasons that maybe would also apply to the situation of that the having an affair with somebody also wouldn't stop her from having Yibum. Meaning she can't really go back to her husband for various reasons, but maybe she could have a Yibum, and therefore that's another reason that he thinks there's nothing to do for this woman. So after working hard at it, after dealing with a lot of these issues, the Noda Behuda show point reminds us that sometimes it's true that with all the efforts in the world, with all goodwill, one cannot always find their way to a kula. And so for our tshuva of the day, for our response of the day, for the 22nd of Kislev from 1785, we have the Rabbi Yehuda talking about both when we are ready to be poskim and what we need to know and what we need to work at in order to be poskim, and also the question of whether or not a woman who has left the religion and then forgot that she needed a yibum can stay with her second husband or not, with her second Jewish husband or not, coming down on the side of there's nothing to do for her and that she will have to get a chalitza before she could continue being married to her current husband. Have a great day.